AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland. And we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock.
A camel turnip.
And welcome to episode, I guess, 61, a special episode of the Fighting Cock podcast, because we have Lucas Ronaldo from Network 10 over in Australia on the line to talk to us about Postecoglou's potential move to Tottenham. Although, Lucas, I don't know, oh, you're a Spurs fan as well, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. I am. Yes, I think I'm one.
Go on.
I'm one of the very few Spurs fans that is going to be happy about this.
Okay.
Basically, Australians are the only ones pleased about this.
Yeah, so like the general mood at Spurs, I don't think this is a slight on him, but obviously as a Spurs fan, you understand the situation we find ourselves in and how frustrating it is. And the fact that we are in this situation again where we don't have a manager and just names just keep falling apart. We've had this list of, we talked about on podcast, Ricky's list yesterday, where, you know, there was some Andrew's bottom, but it's not. I tell us about him then. Apart from you being excited about him as an Australian that he could potentially be managing, I think, would he be the first Australian manager in the Premier League?
Yes, he would be.
Yeah.
Like you say, apart from the fact that I'm Australian, he's not Nuno, I think, is the main thing. Nuno didn't fit the philosophy of the club and what Levy said he wants the club to pursue. Ange definitely does. And I think the best example of why he would be a good appointment, don't get me wrong, if we can get Nagelsmann, we should 100% get Nagelsmann.
Right.
But if it's going to be Arne Slot or any of the other sort of managers, Luis Enrique, any of these managers that are being linked right now who aren't first choice, I think all you have to do is look at the way Celtic fans reacted when he was appointed there. When he was appointed there, he'd just come off of winning the J-League in Japan with Yokohama F. Marinos.
Yeah.
And they talked about Postecoglou. Who's this guy? He doesn't know anything about Scottish football. And he's gone in there when Rangers, I know they're expected to win the league, but at that time, Rangers had just won it.
Yep.
And Celtic have now won two in a row.
So you're saying that the mood was similar, comparable, when Postecoglou was linked to what perhaps Spurs fans are feeling now. All right, let's go back to... I'm just trying to go to, back to the beginning and tell us a bit more about him, because we don't know a great deal. Most of his time has been developing in Australia and in Japan, right?
Yeah. So... basically, his original start was with a club called South Melbourne in our old semi-professional league called the NSL. His first, one of his coaches that he had there was Ferenc Puskás. So a bit of his teachings and the way that he plays is sort of Puskás inspired, because he had a stint managing in Australia.
Well, he had a Puskás leave a legacy in Australia, did he?
Yeah, with South Melbourne. So that sort of inspired Postecoglou, who then was very successful with a Greek club in Melbourne called South Melbourne. After that, he had a bit of time managing in sort of the young Socceroos. And he was sort of revolutionary in that he played this, what has now become tiki-taka and Pep style. Later on, his team, Brisbane Roar, in the A-League that went undefeated for 36 games, a record, was called Rawcelona, because they were basically was at a similar time to Pep's Barca and were sweeping all before them. And Australians, I'm sure the Australians that English football fans will know, are guys like Timmy Cahill and maybe defenders like Lucas Neal, quite physical. His style wasn't that. It was attacking, it was pressing, it was passing the ball around. So I think that's why he would be suited to Tottenham, because it's a very attacking style, and he's quite brave as well. He won't cop too much from the media. I think any Celtic fan will tell you that as well. I'm sure he'll take the piss out of Arsenal a lot in presses, because he does it to Rangers all the time, just sort of to win over the fans more than anything.
Would you say, obviously, the question is can he make the step up? Now, the step up from the what success did he have in Japan?
One J League title, but they hadn't won one for about 20 years before that.
And then, how long was he in Japan before going to Scotland?
Yeah, 3 years. So he had a bit of time there, and then I think finished second in his final year there, and then went across.
So he's going over to Glasgow Celtic, and like you say, they won two titles. That is a step up, and obviously the expectation of managing a side in the old firm is huge. Yeah, but they are expected to win. Coming to Tottenham is a massive, massive step up from that.
Of course.
Now, apparently Arne Slot, one of the reasons why he didn't leave Feyenoord, and this is coming from a Spurs fan and from a biased Spurs perspective, is what I've read is that the job he saw at Tottenham was huge, and he thought that he's quite comfortable in Feyenoord. He's just been given a new contract, more money. Why leave now when to go into what is a very difficult job at Tottenham? Do you think there's any risk of Postecoglou looking at it and going, yeah, this is too much of a mess? Or do you think it's something you would relish?
I think there's a definite risk that he could turn us down. As much as that would sound weird to people that he would turn down Tottenham, but he's always been a bit of he's quite a romantic. I've got his book just here. And in his book, he mentions about the way he sees football. And it's always about passion. He's always been very passionate about all the clubs he's been at. South Melbourne was sort of his junior side. Then with Australia, he actually stepped down because he said he was too passionate about it. There was also rumours of discontent with the board, which is something Spurs fans will like. He didn't like the way that the FFA, the Football Federation of Australia, were acting. And after qualifying for us for a World Cup and winning our first ever Asian Cup, stepped down, said, I don't want to manage this before. And went and managed in Japan. So at the time, that caused a lot of controversy. So that's maybe a good sign that he won't take too much from Levy. But yeah, I do think there's a chance he could turn it down. But at the same time, it's the biggest job he's going to get. No other top six club realistically in the Premier League is going to go for Postecoglou.
So there's no way his ambition might say, I can turn this down. I can't. There's, you know, for some managers, like you say, this is an opportunity that they won't get. But it's also massive, and it's also potentially career damaging as well. Like, not many managers walk away from Tottenham with their reputation intact. Which is, you know, I don't know how you feel. And you know, you're here as a journalist, but as a Spurs fan, how disillusioned it all is now. And you can understand why these managers are saying, well, I don't need this. I don't need this. And that's the worry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just got back from England a couple of weeks ago, and I went to I got very lucky. I went to the Brighton game and the Manchester United game. And when it was we were 2-0 down at United, a lot of my one chance to see Tottenham was spent with everyone going, well, Levy out. And, you know,
yeah,
of course I'm going to join in because everyone's Levy out at this stage. But I think the thing is that, like I say, I do think if he gets offered the job, he'll come. But it wouldn't shock me if he turned it down. Understood. Just because of that, what we mentioned.
Yeah. Tell me about his tactics then. What's his preferred style of play? You know, how does it compare with Tottenham's traditional playing side?
Very, very much suited to Tottenham's sort of playing style. It's possession-based. It's not quite... I think it's changed over time. He normally always goes with a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
But it's quite attacking. And he's said before that he doesn't like using a plan B. He wants to play on the front foot. And what he always says is the plan B is to do plan A better, to sort of attack and whatever happens, happens. So it's entertaining. And after the last 3 years, what we've had to go through, and I'm sure you guys can imagine, it's bad enough watching it when it's 3 p.m. When it's 2 a.m. watching Conte football, it's not fun. I certainly would love to see someone come in that is going to play that style.
For sure.
And the thing is with experience, and I know he's obviously, it's a big step up, as every step in his career has been, but this is the biggest so far. Arne Slot suddenly had a bit of a change, I think, when we were first linked. Everyone was sort of like, why would we want Arne Slot? But then it sort of changed. I'm not sure if we were just sort of convinced. But he was not even... he hadn't managed a game of football when we were in the Champions League final. Ange Postecoglou has been managing for 20 years. So in terms of experience, I know Arne Slot was doing that in the Eredivisie, but it's still a step up to go to the Premier League. Ange has an extra 20 years managing in a lot of different countries, managing where people have gone, you're Australian, you're not going to know anything about football, which is obviously the perception as Americans get. So he's had to be adaptable in his career, whereas Arne Slot realistically hasn't. He's only managed 2 clubs, both in his home country.
It's funny you said that. I think a lot of the mood around Spurs fans, you know, partly is the kind of pessimism of being a Spurs fan at the moment, the pessimistic nature of following our club, but the fact that he's Australian is an issue. It's stupid that he is, but it is. That is going to be at the forefront. He's like, what? How is an Australian going to be able to understand and cope at this level?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And that's the irony of that, is that very few English managers can even do it. Like, you know, you've got Eddie Howe at the moment. I mean, Eddie Howe is has the best finish of any English manager in 20 years. So this isn't about that. It's just that there's never been an Australian manager in the Premier League. I think that is a part of it. And that's something you've got to look past, because where he comes from is irrelevant, right? It's how good he can coach.
Yeah.
How do you think you'll manage these big time players? Because Celtic, he brought in a lot of players, brought in something like 29 transfers at Celtic. Mm. How do you think you would manage the big time players we have, like Kane and Son, and how might they react to him? Is he an abrasive manager? Does he put his arm around? Does he create a community at a club?
Very much an arm around type of manager. But one thing he does do, he's not afraid to come in. His first big job in the A-League with Brisbane Roar, he came in, and these names won't mean anything to Spurs fans, but Craig Moore, I think he's at Rangers, one of our big defenders, played in the World Cup, came in and he was sort of Brisbane's big player, got rid of him, got rid of another player, Danny Teato. Experienced players is more what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So he's not afraid to come in and sort of tear up shop. So if we were in a situation where, almost like Mourinho does, where he picks out a player and says, no, you're gone. He sort of has done that in the past. But at the same time, he's very much an arm around sort of manager. Everyone that has worked with Postecoglou in the past is always, it's a bit like Pochettino, where people say he was amazing to work for. He was so kind to me, that sort of thing. And like you say, bringing in players, he has shown that he brought a lot of players in from the J League when he went to Scotland.
Yeah.
And we've seen how good Matoma's been at Brighton this year. There's a lot of guys that go under the radar, maybe outside of Europe, that might not be able to play for Tottenham. But if a guy like Matoma can step up, there's guys all across the world that he might have better access to and is probably more willing to take a punt on, I think.
In terms of player development, obviously we'd be interested to see what managers can do with our youth setup. Does he have a good record of working with youth players and introducing them into the first team?
Yeah, well, he was Australia's youth manager for a long time. And like I said, he when he was Australia's coach, he got rid of Lucas Neal, mentioned before, who was our captain at the time, got rid of him, brought through a lot of young players, who've one of them being Massimo Luongo, who was on the book of Spurs at one point.
That's right.
He does tend to sort of play the young players. He's almost even though he's 57, which Spurs for some reason have a problem with, he's almost the archetype of the young manager, trying to play that sort of attacking style, possession based on Pep, and bringing through young players, which we see a lot now. But he is effectively Australia's Pep Guardiola, really.
Yeah. What about his adaptability? Like you said about him, you know, having one style of play and doing that to the best of his ability. But we've seen there's bits and pieces of Mason's game management that I've quite liked, his willingness to adapt to situations in a difficult game, changes in formation. Is he steadfast in that formation? This is the way we're playing. Doesn't matter what the other team are doing, we're going to imprint our will on the game. Or can he offer some level of pragmatism? Not that that's a positive thing. I'm just curious, really, because Conte had one way of playing and that was it. And it was, I mean, it's poor.
Yeah, I think Conte, I don't think Conte talked about tactics this whole season, to be honest. No. I think he was committed to just playing that style. But I feel like with Postecoglou, he is adaptable in formation, but not in style. I don't think he'll change his style too much. He'll still try and play attacking football, but he has changed his formation to suit oppositions. When he was Australia coach, he started playing a three at the back but not the way Spurs play it, with wing backs, with wingers. So it was effectively just three centre backs and then a bunch of attackers, which a lot of people at the time went, this is nuts, but he's he's brave like that.
Did it work?
Well, yes and no. It got us to the World Cup, but then afterwards, that was sort of when he quit.
The thing is,
it did get us to a World Cup.
When we're playing teams that sit back in a low block, if we're playing attacking football at White Hart Lane, teams will try and soak up pressure. In that environment, I don't have any issue with sort of Perisic playing as a you know, attacking wing back, or it's just at times when
Porro as well.
Exactly, indeed. What do you think he would do with players like that? I mean, because we are set up, we have kind of wing backs as opposed to full backs. John Bass recently mentioned that he doesn't buy this on the podcast. He doesn't buy this idea that wing backs can't pay as full backs if they are essentially defenders, as Porro is. Mm-hmm. But what do you think he would do in that situation where we have lots of these wing backs, we have a couple of full backs, one's not even in the club at the moment in Reguilón. You know, we've got lots of centre backs that are not good enough. How do you think he might go about solving those problems?
I think Perisic, I think he has played inverted fullbacks at times at Celtic with a four at the back. So maybe Perisic could have a life doing that. Personally, I don't see any situation where Porro can play in a back four. He can barely play as the wing back. He can only attack. I think he's the worst defender at the club, which is saying something, considering we just brought him for 45 million. But I think I would say he'll play a four at the back. So Porro, I think, eventually would get found out in that formation. So he might try it, but I'd say Perisic is one that could still play as that sort of inverted role that he's done at Celtic.
That's worrying, isn't it? I know what you're saying. Is will a manager have the patience to coach Porro and get him into that right back role when Emerson Royal can already do it? And as a fullback, less what does he do with his fullbacks typically? Are they attack minded in his system?
Attacking, yeah.
What, overlapping?
Yeah, normally attacking. Yeah. Normally, when he was in Australia, he always had overlapping attacking fullbacks, and that was a big part of his system. Since he's been at Celtic, he's sort of done the one that's in vogue now, doing the underlapping with inverted fullbacks. I think it will be a situation where he'll get here and, well, if he does end up coming, that he'd get here and see, okay, this is what this guy needs to do. The good thing about those Porro and Perisic is that now that Lucas Moura is gone, if Dan Juma doesn't come back, if we're playing a 4-3-3, those guys could be the sort of backup wingers, if you like. So there could still be a role in a 4-3-3 for them, even if they are found out defensively. But I'd say that in a Postecoglou system, even as much as he loves an attacking fullback, that Porro would eventually get found out, because at the end of the day, he can't defend to save his life.
No. What about that midfield? So, you know, if he plays a three, is it going to be, will we be looking to, would he need an attacking midfielder there? Or do you think is his midfield much more, you know, pragmatic and solid? How would he play a midfield three if he does?
The one player I'd fear for in that midfield three would be Højbjerg. I don't think he likes a DM who just can't pass, which Højbjerg, as much as good at tackling, and he can, we've seen at times that he can play a good through ball, but I don't think Højbjerg is a Postecoglou player. I think he would want a creative midfielder, even if it's not an out and out number 10. We've seen how much those have gone out of vogue recently. I think he would sort of look to bring in at least one creative midfielder, because that midfield at the moment is just,
yeah,
they can't pass. None of them.
What is there anyone at Celtic, do you think, that he might make the move with him? Anyone decent there?
To be honest, I don't think so. I don't think he'd be naive enough, because since he went across, everyone's sort of gone, oh, who's he going to take? Who's he going to take in that's Australian from the A-League that he can bring over there? But he's gone, no, this is a bit of a level above. He did take guys from Japan, because it's
comparable,
their standard is a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But I don't think he'd take anyone. You could make an argument for Jota or something like that, but I don't think there's anyone that is of the level required for Spurs, to be honest.
What is the mood then in Australia for about the idea that Postecoglou could be a Premier League manager? Is this something that's been keenly followed in the press? Or
absolutely. Well, as everyone knows, Australia football isn't our main sport, but Postecoglou has sort of broken through that, and everyone knows who he is now. And everyone basically wants him to go to a Premier League team. When there's been any sort of job, which there's been a lot, like the Everton job, for example, people were trying to link him to, I think, Southampton at one stage this season. But he's basically, I wouldn't be surprised if he got offered those jobs and turned them down. I could not see him. The other thing about him is he'll probably leave at the end of the season after their cup final, if he were to go. So that's another wait. But Australia is basically all sold on this Postecoglou journey. So I think you would almost see that sort of thing that's happened with Sun, where you get a lot of South Koreans that have started supporting Tottenham. I think that would sort of happen with Australia, because all of a sudden you've got...
We're over there, aren't we? We're over there in...
coming to Perth soon. Just in July, and then obviously Scott Munn coming in as the
what is going on? It's like the Australian invasion into Tottenham.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, in the city I live in Adelaide, there's a relationship with a school that's happening, where Tottenham are partnering with a school to send some coaches over and that sort of thing
Is this because they believe that there is an untapped market in Australia, that there are the potential there? Looking at the demographic, listen to the Fighting Cock, it's not insignificant, the people that do listen to the podcast in Australia. Like, it is there. It's probably like maybe fourth or fifth biggest country that listens to the pod. And the only reason I'm saying that is because it's probably reflective of how many people follow the club as well, right? So,
yeah.
I wonder if they just think that there's, like, the Premier League is going to explode if it hasn't already. How popular is Premier League football over there?
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
The Premier League's way more popular than the A-League here. Everyone sort of, not everyone, but you're much more likely to have people talking about the Premier League and knowing what's going on than the A-League. So I think not so much an untapped market for God. I hope that Levy isn't thinking, let's get Postecoglou in because he might get some Australians watching. I hope it can't be that.
Wait, so are kids in Australia still much more interested in rugby and cricket than football? Then
it's mainly Australian rules, our version of football and rugby league.
Mate, that is Australian rules. That game is mental. Like, occasionally you get some clips come through, and you're like, why is the pitch so? It's this massive pitch. This fight's breaking out. It's mental. No, it's not played anywhere else in the world, is it? Or is it like maybe?
And it's by far the biggest sport here.
Is it?
By a mile, 100,000. Like, they play at the MCG, 100,000 people a year. But so it's weird going from, especially being a football fan first and foremost. Yeah. Here, I also do like Aussie rules and cover it for work. But going here and it being such a sort of a bubble of footy. Of Australian footy, and then going over to UK recently, and everyone's going, "What the fuck is that thing you've got over there?" You're just going, "I don't know. I don't know what we've got."
It's mental. Every now and then you get clips and stuff, so you're probably sharing it around. But it's just, I mean, I couldn't tell you a single thing about it apart from I know that it exists. So you just mentioned Scott Munn there just before we finish. Scott Munn. Again, an unknown quantity to Spurs. Most of us had never heard of him before he was given the role of chief football officer. What did you know much about him before he became Spurs?
I knew him, but it's not like he's a big name or anything here. He'd worked obviously with the City Football Group, but in China, not for Manchester City and for Melbourne City, who are obviously owned by Manchester City. Mm. So there is a bit of a link. Having worked at a club in the City Football Group, as Postecoglou did in Japan, they didn't cross paths at that time, but there is a bit of a sort of a tenuous link there. But yeah, he's not a big name. It did surprise me. That sort of came from nowhere, to be honest, that appointment. It doesn't seem like, well, we are getting a director of football in, so it doesn't seem like he's too involved in football operations. He's more of a finance guy.
Why give him the title chief football officer?
It's strange. I almost get the feeling that Levy's gone, I'm going to relinquish control, and he's almost taking part of what Levy did, and then the director of football, and then they work together. I think in the release it said he'll work closely with Paratici at the time. Yeah.
So it's almost like Daniel Levy is trying to move away from the footballing operations, and he's got brought in a minion that could just do his bidding.
Yeah. A literal minion. He's about 5'5".
I know. I mean, imagine. I mean, I'm not. I don't know if you can say anything offensive about heightists, but I'm not a heightist, right? I don't know what the term might be. But imagine them going into negotiating rooms, and Daniel Levy and Scott Munn, they're like, both 5'5", 5'6". It's not the powerhouse you want, is it?
That photo of them at the airport is there with no belt.
Yeah, I know. Present yourself correctly. Anyway, look. As you understand it, his role is sort of financial and sort of business strategy, not football manager.
Yeah, like you say, it's still obviously a football role, but more in terms of not searching for players and stuff like that.
It's running the business.
Just sort of running the football business as opposed to running the, like, directing scouts and stuff like that.
Okay. So is that about all you can give us on Scott Munn? Is there anything else that we should know?
He's worked, like I say, he's worked in Aussie rules and in the Olympics. So he's not primarily, I'm sure he had an interest in football before, but he didn't. I don't think he grew up as a football person, to be honest, because he sort of found that later in life. So he doesn't, like I say, I'd be very worried if his role is to come here and tell our scouts, oh, you need to search here, here, and here, because he hasn't really done that before.
It just sounds like we shouldn't even be acknowledge his existence, really. Like, just let him get on and do do the job. Just do the job and get on with it. Then someone else needs to come in. I mean, I don't know. No, like it's a tough one for Postecoglou as well, because will it impact him that, you know, he's got to go into a job and he doesn't know who the director of football is, and like you said, he's had a somewhat tempestuous relationship with other owners. If a DOF comes in, essentially who supersedes him if in the power structure of a club, that a DOF goes in above the manager or the head coach, for example, he's going to have to work under someone. That person needs to know that working relationship will be compatible. Doesn't matter. They could both be geniuses. If they can't work together, it's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
I don't see any manager joining. No, I mean, would you? Like, if you were Postecoglou looking at it going, look, this is a great opportunity, but the structure isn't there for me to do my job yet.
You'd have to be slightly insane, but yeah. I think that's just the way we've gone about this again, which is amazing that we've done this 2 years later. But I don't understand how we can do this 2 years after what we did with Nuno. And then it seems so obvious that the first thing we need to do is get the director of football in. We knew what was going to happen with Paratici. And then now, once those two are in place, then they're going to start searching for players. By then, it's going to be the end of July, beginning of August. And we're going to have another window where we're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We won't be ready for next season. And all of that is Daniel Levy. He's fun as the head of the club. If we're in this situation twice on the bounce, you know, you can stay long enough to ruin your reputation. That's what happens. That's in my opinion, done a great job at Spurs. But in the last 3 or 4 years, his reputation has taken an absolute pasting. Lucas, we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you so much, mate. And if he comes, I'll be tapping you up for more information on how he might set up Spurs next season, should it happen. But at the moment, it currently is all speculation and just sort of waiting for it to come out that he's turned us down. It would amaze me. It would amaze me if Ryan Mason isn't in charge next season, just the way things are going. It's fucking mental. I know. Lucas, thank you, mate.
It's been a pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers. It's the fight in. It's the fight in. Clock. It's the fight in. It's the fight in. Cock! A camel surname! Sports Social Podcast Network.